Hi, this is Willie Wilson. You're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio.
Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio on 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. It's Monday morning. My name is Jeff. Today, host Latara Smith talks with Claudia Thomas about her experiences with the mentally ill inmates and efforts to meet their needs behind bars. Then, host Jeff Humfeld talks with Judy Henderson, who was granted clemency after serving 35 years. She will tell us about a postcard campaign urging Governor Mike Parsons to consider clemency pleas for women in the Missouri Department of Corrections who deserve release. Stay tuned for the calendar of events in the middle of the broadcast and the 420 drug war news at the end of the broadcast. We want to thank our engineer today, Keith Washburn. Now, here is Latara and her guest.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for tuning in. I'm Latara Smith of the Casey Freedom Project, and this morning I am blessed with the opportunity to have a guest on the show by the name of Claudia Thomas. Ms. Thomas, thank you very much for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
It's really good to have someone come on the show that knows so much about the topic that we're going to be discussing this morning. This morning, we're wanting to focus on mentally ill offenders here within our Jackson County, Missouri jurisdiction. You know, a lot of people don't know this, Ms. Thomas, and probably don't even think about this, but going in and out of the jails myself, and then you being a past employee of the local county jail, there's a lot of mentally ill individuals in jail. Would you agree?
I definitely agree.
And I really feel like these individuals are really, really left behind. There's a lot of resources in our community for those who are mentally ill. And I think a lot of individuals go without knowing about these resources. One thing that I can just really think of right off the bat, a program that individuals who are mentally ill can deal with if they live here in Jackson County, Missouri, or let me say one of our county court programs that a mentally ill individual can go through is through the Jackson County Mental Health Courts. Are you familiar with the mental health courts?
Yes, I definitely am. I actually work for an organization on the weekend, which is Comprehensive Mental Health, and they are in correlation with the mental health courts of municipal part of Kansas City, and they do serve a lot of individuals, but they have limited resources and housing for them.
Right, right. And so I just want to let the listeners know, because a lot of people don't even know that Jackson County, Missouri actually does have a mental health court. I think a lot of people know that we have drug court.
Yes.
But I think the mental health court is kind of left behind and or kind of left without, you know, a lot of people knowing about it. I believe the judge over mental health court is Judge David Fry, correct?
Judge Fry is over the mental health, and he's also over another part of the courts, but there's also Judge Williams that is a part of the mental health courts.
Okay, okay. Well, I know Judge Fry is really, really, he's really, really a good judge. I've sat in and watched how he deals with some of the clients that are going through, whether it's drug court, mental health court, or whatever the case may be. And he really, really is, he's really patient with those people, and he really works with them. I have a lot of respect for Judge Fry. When we talk about mental health courts here in Jackson County, there is some criteria that one would have to meet. And with that being so, and I really want those people out in our community to really pay attention to what we're saying here, because a lot of times individuals who are, you know, incarcerated or being charged with nonviolent offenses a lot of them have, you know, mental health issues. I kind of see it over and over again with people who may like struggle with bipolar, and they kind of lack the self-control, and they get a lot of, you know, misdemeanor assault cases, you know, or, you know, destruction of private property and things like that. And sometimes they kind of get dealt with harshly in the courts, if because they don't know, you know, that this mental health court exists. I've seen a lot of people who were mentally ill, who were, you know, arrested and charged with nonviolent offenses, actually end up going to prison when their cases could have been through the mental health court, which is a diversion program, which would, you know, stop them from going to prison, but more so address their issues and, you know, take them through the local courts. So do you see that a lot, Ms. Thomas?
Yes, I do. From being at the Jackson County Jail as a sergeant, I realized that a lot of the inmates, I worked on the second floor, and that's where they house the mental health inmates. And a lot of them were there for disorderly conduct, trespassing, and resisting arrest. These are not major offenses, but I witnessed an individual who actually cussed out the judge and got sentenced to 4 years in the county jail. This individual has a long history of being in the county jail back and forth, on top of the fact that everyone knows she has mental health issues. We had case managers fighting for her to get this 4 years overturned because it seemed ridiculous. If you have, you cussed out a judge and you end up with 4 years in a county jail, that doesn't make any sense.
So we're saying 4 years in the local county jail, not the Department of Corrections.
No, she never made it there.
But to be held in the county jail.
She stayed in the county jail in solitary confinement.
Wow.
So this is an individual that I worked with on a regular basis, and I work with the case managers and the mental health coordinators there at the jail, and they actually fought to get the sentence reduced, but it didn't get reduced.
So as a... because I know you have a lot of experiences in case management, working with those who are mentally ill. Do you see that happen a lot, where they're kind of, you know, dropped between the cracks and are not treated fairly in the system?
Most definitely. I have to give the therapists at the county jail the props they are deserved, but in return, I have to give the system an understanding of what they're doing to individuals. If you're not helping them to get the medication, the counseling, the therapy that they need, and they're put back out on the streets, it becomes a revolving door. A lot of times people have came into the jail and stayed for over a year, and they get stabilized on their medication, but they don't have the support they need once they exit the jail to continue on their medication. There's not a wraparound program that is definitely serving a large population of people. We have resources in the community, but there's limited beds, there's limited services. And I think that the issue definitely needs to be addressed.
Well, you know what? That reminds me, when you sharing me the story about the young lady who, you know, cursed out the judge. I know of a gentleman, and his crime was nonviolent. He did two very small drug transactions. And by me bringing up this case, I want to hold some of these attorneys accountable, because sometimes some of this also falls back on the attorney. If that attorney is representing someone who is mentally ill, and, you know, every attorney in Jackson County, Missouri knows that we have a Jackson County Mental Health Court, okay? And I just feel like if you have a client and you know that they're dealing with mental health issues, sometimes you can recognize that just interacting with them. Sometimes you can't. Mental health doesn't always show up. But sometimes in the person's behavior, you can say, okay, you know, something is not quite right here. And this particular individual had two very small petty drug charges. And had I not stepped in to help this individual and followed his case on MoCaseNet and saw even that the state had offered him 7 years in prison for two small drug transactions, nonviolent, someone that had, you know, a long history of mental health issues and problems, you know, and he was really manipulated into doing what he did because he was very vulnerable. And, you know, people kind of would say, hey, go do this for me. Okay. And he'd go do it. Well, 7 years in prison is what they were going to offer him. And his attorney was literally getting ready to have this guy to plea out to that 7 years. And had I not stepped in and looked at the paperwork and said, you know, hey, this individual can go through mental health court. He meets the criteria to go through mental health court. The attorney still was not at all trying to hear it. I literally had to email the prosecutor's office and say, hey, you know, this, I have made this request to the attorney. This young man meets the criteria to go through your program, okay? And the criteria, let me run over that real quick. In order for anyone to participate in the Jackson County Mental Health Court, the eligibility requirements are as follows. You must be a resident of Jackson County, Missouri. You must have a severe or persistent mental illness, developmental disability, and or traumatic brain injury. No violent felony convictions in the past 3 years. Okay? And other requirements set by the prosecutor and of George judge may pertain is how it reads off of their website. So there again, this individual most definitely met the requirements, but his attorney was not seeing to it that, you know, was not making this request known. And, of course, eventually the individual did end up getting approved through mental health court. But it should not have taken me as an advocate to email the prosecutor's office to create a paper trail with this individual's attorney to say, hey, listen, I have asked you this, okay? And, you know, the referral process to get into mental health court here in Jackson County, okay, it comes from referrals from police officers, prosecuting attorneys. This is why I emailed the prosecutor and made him aware that this individual had a long mental health history. Defense attorneys, which that defense attorney was not doing it. But there again, this is why I'm holding these attorneys accountable, saying if you have a client that you know can qualify for this program, the attorneys need to be referring these people to that program. Probation officers, judges, treatment providers, and family members can also step in through the referral process. So, you know, what have you seen more cases like that when you were in the jail, people who were maybe unjustly there?
Well, the young lady that I was speaking of, she should have been in mental health court. The judge that she actually cussed out was not in mental health court.
Okay.
So I think that her case should have been referred over, and she probably would not have had to do the 4 years because she has a long history of mental health issues.
So that goes back to no one made that maybe referral for her to go.
Yes.
And this, that's the point that I was making about, you know, and while we're doing this show, to bring people's awareness to the fact that we do have this type of county program. And not only do we have it, but these are the requirements, and this is how you can get your loved one in. You know, if they are suffering with mental health illness and they have some type of pending nonviolent charge, you know, because it's a diversion program. That's exactly what it is. It's a diversion program, and it allows the defendant to receive treatment in lieu of prosecution for a pending charge. OK, it also states here, upon successful completion of all diversion requirements, the charges can be dismissed. OK, and also the mental health court program is voluntary. They don't have to participate in it. But it's a diversion program. So I would think to utilize a diversion program would be better for our county tax dollars.
Yes.
You know, I would think so. Because that's, you know, when we have people confined in jail, that costs us.
It's very costly.
You know, so why not utilize a diversion program?
It's very costly, on top of the fact that most jails are not equipped to have individuals that have mental health problems for long term.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're dealing with Jackson County Jail and the court system, individuals stay in the jail for a year to 2 years waiting to go to court. So if you have an individual that has mental health issues and they're there that long, I've seen individuals that we've had to send to the state hospital because if they're unable to connect with this person, they put them in isolation. And isolation makes their mental health issues worse.
Right.
So we've had to send them out for 6 months to St. Joe to the state hospital to get them back on track. So I do encourage people to, you know, if you have loved ones that are in the correctional system, support them, be their advocate. If you have individuals that are on the streets and have mental health issues, encourage them to seek help. There are plenty of facilities out here that can do outpatient. We don't have a lot of facilities in Kansas City that can actually house individuals with mental health, but I encourage you to get them some type of help and support the ones that are incarcerated, because they honestly need someone that understands what's going on with them and can advocate for them within the system. Because when you're in jail and you have mental health issues, I won't say a lot of things go unnoticed, but there's a communication breakdown.
Right. I can't imagine. I can't imagine. So, and Ms. Thomas, you made a very good point when you talked about wraparound services. When we have individuals who are dealing with, you know, mental health issues, you know, and they're in jail, many times they do become compliant on their medications because they're confined. Yes. They're getting their medications. A lot of times, you know, I've talked to different individuals and I'd say, well, you know, what happened? You were doing so well when you were in jail and when you got out, but all of a sudden it turned. And one thing I would always hear is, I couldn't keep up with my medications, you know, whether it was a male and he didn't qualify for Medicaid or anything because he didn't get SSI. And everyone, sometimes people think, you know, everyone who deals with some type of mental illness or disability gets SSI or Social Security. That's not true. And if they don't receive one of those, then they don't get the medical benefits that go along with it. It's kind of harder on the men, because if they don't have the dependents, you know, like the women can apply for TANF and they have their children, so they're going to get Medicaid for them and for their children. But many times the men is who I see really fall between the cracks of coming out of the jail or coming out of DOC. If they're in the Department of Corrections, Department of Corrections, I believe, changed this about a year ago, where they used to give just 30 days of medication. Now they give 90 days of medication when they get out. And that's to allow the inmate or the ex-offender more time to adjust in society, to as far as adjusting, getting their medical needs met. Because when you come out and you apply for these programs, whether it's, you know, Rediscover or whether it's SWOPE or whatever, Truman or whatever mental health services that they choose to go to, they usually have a little period before they can, you know, go through their assessment and things as such. So I'm glad that we're talking about this subject and shedding light, most definitely shedding light to this particular subject, because it is such a need. And I really don't think people realize how our system has so many people. I was researching before we did the show, and I noticed that some people did a survey, and 39% of the people that took the survey of the inmates who were in jail, 39% of them had some type of mental health diagnosis, whether it was PTSD, bipolar, manic depressive disorder, schizoaffective disorder, or schizophrenia, and others. And that's a big percent, 39%. That's a really, really big percent. Well, you know, this morning, thank you guys for tuning in. You're listening to Latara Smith of the Casey Freedom Project. I am here interviewing Mrs. Claudia Thomas, and we are talking about the issue of mentally ill individuals here in our Jackson County, Missouri jurisdiction, and the resources, programs, and things that are available for them, for those who are dealing with our justice system here in Jackson County, Missouri. Now, you worked in the county jail. I'm sure that you saw quite a bit working over there in the jail.
Definitely.
And would you say that, I know you said that, you know, there's a breakdown in communication. Do you think, being a former sergeant of at the jail, do you think that it would be wise for the Jackson County Jail to offer some type of training to their guards, to the staff, to teach them and show them how to deal with those who are mentally ill?
I honestly do. I was at the jail for a year before I actually went through any type of training. Fortunately, I came from a background of working in the mental health field and being a program facilitator for homes of mentally ill people. I want to correct that, developmentally disabled individuals.
Amen.
And so it was kind of heartfelt that I worked on the second floor, which is the medical floor, for over a year. And I was the only individual on that floor, including the nurses, that had a background from mental health. So I worked with the CERT team, and I have to give them praise because they all had a compassion that was different from the other officers I had worked with.
Right.
But none of them had any training in mental health. So thankfully, they had the compassion for the inmates. But as far as understanding what they were actually going through, as far as mental health, they didn't have that. So I was the only one there that was fighting back and forth with trying to get the nurses and the mental health coordinators to understand different things that were going on. We had one individual that, you know, when you go to jail, everybody can't deal with solitary confinement.
Right.
And so I watched one individual deteriorate, and no one noticed it. And at that time, I was just a CO. So I brought it to the attention of my acting sergeant, and I was like, this guy has, I did a cell inspection. He had 10 plates of food in his cell. He had stopped eating. He had shut down. Mentally, he had had a breakdown.
Right.
So once I brought it to her attention, we brought it to the nurse's attention, and they actually took them a couple of days, but they sent him to St. Joe.
Right.
So there is a... there's a need for training. When I did go to the training after the year of being there, there was an hour segment of a mental health coordinator coming in speaking with us. That's not enough education.
Right.
There is a large population in the jail that have mental health issues. And if you have officers that are not trained to deal with them, that's when the combativeness comes. You have to train these officers to deal with these people, because if you look at the statistics, there is the population of the jail out of 100%, you have 83% of people that have some type of mental health issue, whether it's depression or whether it's schizophrenia. You still need to know how to deal with that and look at the signs of what's going on with that individual. When we had some issues with the city part of the jail, and we had to outsource all the city inmates, we have a young lady that when I started, they told me she fights white shirts. She'll fight five or six a day. She didn't care.
Right.
And so,
white shirt meaning someone
that means someone. No, a white shirt is a person that just starts.
Oh, my. Okay.
So I was on the second floor. I had the CERT team behind me, but I still felt a little intimidated. But I had the experience of mental health behind me. Never had a problem with this individual. She had major mental illnesses. So when they sent the city inmates out and outsourced them because the jail was having issues, they didn't send her medication. She's sitting in a state prison right now for 4 years for attacking an officer up in Platte County.
Wow.
So there is a breakdown that needs to be dealt with, from training officers to communication with other counties, because they do outsource inmates.
Right.
So this could have been prevented.
Exactly.
But this young lady is doing 4 years in the prison for attacking an officer up in Platte County because we dropped the ball and no one sent her medication. And it was a small jail, so they didn't do the assessment for the mental health.
Right.
And eventually she spiraled out.
So she's gone on to a Department of Corrections facility.
Yes, unnecessarily, because she was 2 months away from being released from the county for being in there for 2 years.
Wow.
So their training does definitely need to be done, and it needs to be done in an extensive amount of training, a continuous training that goes on.
Right. And I most definitely agree with you. At one time, I worked for the Tulsa County Jail in the medical department, and I actually was the individual who would do the med passes. So I would go to the different pods and, you know, I mean, God, I passed meds to 1,400 people a day.
Yes.
And that was quite a job. But I promise you, if I went into one pod and it was 300 inmates in there that I had to pass meds to, 200 and probably 50 of them all had mental health medications that they were receiving while they were being held there in the Tulsa County Jail. So just to give people kind of a good look at how it is a big thing. It's a big issue. And with this young lady, you said went to DOC. Now, the Department of Corrections, okay, they are supposed to do a screening when those individuals come in and screen them for, you know, to see if they have any type of mental health issues or problems. Do any of the medical records for those who are mentally ill that were at the Jackson County, do any of their medical records follow them over to DOC, or do you know?
Yes, they do follow them to DOC, but when you outsource them to these smaller jails, they don't follow them there all the time.
Okay.
So that becomes a problem.
Okay. Because, you know, they're supposed to screen them when they come in, but I think that would be pretty helpful if they were coming in and they could ask, you know, automatically get that paperwork and see, okay, this is an individual who does have a history of mental illness. Kind of helps them to know what they're going to be dealing with moving forward, you know, with that person. But the Department of Corrections also offers specialized programming for those with severe mental illness and developmental disabilities, okay? The Farmington Correctional Center is the site for their social rehabilitation program, their unit. It's a 100-bed housing unit. I don't know if a lot of people know about that or not, but it's a 100-bed housing unit for mentally ill offenders, and it's designed to offer long-term structured setting for them. Because that's something that I noticed, too. Putting someone who deals with mental illness in the hole, solitary confinement is the proper way, I guess, to say the hole. It only worsens their mental, you know, their stability. It only worsens that. It actually throws them into a crisis. I know there was a gentleman when I worked for the county jail, and, you know, we would try to. Some of the guards literally would make fun of him because, I mean, he really did have some issues. But one day we went in and he was just tearing sheets of the Bible, and he was eating them. And they were laughing and laughing. And because the Bible was property of that jail, okay, he actually got in trouble for destruction of county property. And they were sitting there just laughing at this guy. And I went in to help him and talk with him. And come to find out, he was hearing voices and they were telling him, you've got to get more of the Word of God in you. And so that was his way of getting more of the Word of God in him, was to tear the pages of the Bible and to eat them. And, you know, that just broke my heart that those officers sat back and laughed and joked. And I actually got in trouble because they said, you know, You took too much time with him. You were supposed to be in another pot, but this man literally was having a breakdown, and I was not going to leave him. He was suicidal. He was getting ready to kill himself. He had already torn his blanket to make the thing to hang himself. And had I not stayed in there and spoke with him and talked with him, and of course, as a previous mental health tech, because I've worked as a mental health tech before, I knew, you know, I was able to recognize. So I think that's something that both the Missouri Department of Corrections need to think about, as well as the Jackson County Jail, Wyandotte County Jail, or any of them, that they need to start offering training for their correctional officers in the area of mental illness to help individuals. I really do think of that. I really do believe that. And speaking of Wyandotte County, let me say this too. Wyandotte County, Kansas, they now also have a mental health court, okay? They now have that, so I don't know much about it. But for anyone who's listening, who has a loved one who is mentally ill and is dealing with the justice system over in Wyandotte County, there too is a mental health county court over there, and I'm sure that you can contact their office and they would be able to give you some type of information. Let me ask you this, Ms. Thomas. Along with us both agreeing that there needs to be some type of training there, you know, for the correctional officers in the jail, do you think that they need to have certain things in their housing units maybe?
I think that they are anticipating building a new jail. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be very beneficial for the community and the officers that work in the jail if they have a separate housing unit for mentally ill people.
Okay.
Because at the county jail, when I started, we had a padded cell.
Right.
That padded cell has been destroyed for the last 3 years. It was repaired, and then it was destroyed again. So they need the proper housing for them. And I think if they're going to build a new jail, they need to build a jail that has a separate housing for them and trained officers to specifically to work with them.
Okay. Okay. And that's a good point because, you know, after years of, you know, going by, I'm sure they needed to redo that. Well, we're coming to the close of the show, so let me give you the last minutes here. What would you like to say?
I would like to say that I would like for our community to understand that mental health is on a different level now, and that we have a lot of young children that have a lot of mental illness problems, and they are drug-induced. And when I say drug-induced, it's from the drugs, the street drugs that they are using.
Exactly.
And I need people to be aware that the street drugs are actually causing a lot of young people to have mental health issues. And if you know this, get them some type of drug addiction help so that it won't have the onset of mental health, because that is the bottom line. It's going to cause mental health issues.
Right. And that's a very good point. So, you know, and my plea to those in the community, if you have family members or loved ones who are mentally ill, who are dealing with our justice system, please check out our local Jackson County, Missouri mental health courts. Everyone, thank you so much for tuning in, and you all have a blessed day.
Now, the calendar for the week of May 6th. The Criminal Justice Task Force will meet Monday, May 6th, from 6:45 to 8:45 p.m. at the Church of the Good Shepherd, 4947 Choteau Drive, KCMO. The Criminal Justice Task Force's mission is to lobby the Missouri State Legislature for sentencing laws that are fair and basic human rights of those that are incarcerated. For information, contact Robin Johnson at 816-522-4081 or by email at redrob, that's REDROB 2655 at yahoo.com. The Kansas City Chapter of Missourians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty will meet Tuesday, May 7th from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church, 4501 Walnut, KCMO. They will be addressing opportunities to table at local events, legislative updates, future activities, and more. There will also be details of this year's MADP annual meeting to be held in St. Louis, June 29th, with newly elected prosecutor Wesley Bell as the keynote speaker. Mothers of Incarcerated Sons and Daughters will have their monthly meeting Saturday, May 11th, from noon to 2 p.m. at the Waldo Branch Library, 201 East 75th Street, KCMO. If you have a loved one that is incarcerated and need advice and support, MISD has members that may be able to help. Corey's Network invites survivors of murder to their weekly workshop to learn how to deal with grief, the media, investigation, court, and moving forward after a homicide has occurred. This is a workshop, not a grief group. You should bring something to take notes with, and please include only those individuals mature enough in age to deal with issues being covered during the meeting. The next workshop, Beginning the Journey, will be held Monday, May 6th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Church of the Four Corners, 14300 East U.S. Highway 40, KCMO. The church is located east of the Hy-Vee at 40 Highway and Nolan Road. For more information and listings of future workshops, call 816-834-9161 or email Corey's Network@gmail.com. Kansas City Black Mamas Bailout 2019 is a series of events to raise awareness of the issue of the bail bond systems and to raise money to bail mothers out of jail in time for Mother's Day. Every day, tens of thousands of people languish in jail simply because they cannot afford bail. In addition to the over $9 billion wasted to incarcerate people who have been convicted of no crime, pretrial incarceration has catastrophic impacts on families and communities. There have been a number of events in the past week sponsored by different groups such as Real Justice Network, KC Democratic Socialist, KC Green Party, Midwest Innocence Project, KC Black Homeschooling Families, and the Help KC Reentry Program for Women. One of the events yet to come is Beyond the Basic, anti-racism training and panel discussion about criminal injustice, black women and incarceration, America's cruel legacy of family separation. You can attend this event from 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday, May 9th at Uzazi Village, 4232 Troost Avenue, KCMO. My name is Jeff, reminding you that these events and more can be found on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page, as well as the Jaws of Justice Radio page on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. Welcome back to Jaws of Justice Radio. This is Jeff Humfeld, and right now I am talking with Judy Henderson. And Judy, yes. Why don't you tell us a little bit about this campaign to get clemency for women who have been behind bars for a long time and those who just plain shouldn't be there in the first place?
Yes, I would love to do that, Jeff. And thank you for giving me this opportunity to put this out to the community. We began this national campaign in March. It was created actually in January through the National Council for Incarcerated and Formerly Incarcerated Women and Girls. And they have always done federal clemencies through the presidents of the United States, but they had yet tackled the individual state. So we are now going to that level, and each state has its own leader in that state that will encourage our governor to use his power of clemency to release those women that should no longer be incarcerated for various reasons. And some of those reasons could be disparity of sentencing. It could be evidence that was not presented, but the appeals courts cannot allow it to be presented today. They can't make it retroactive, which was part of the evidence in my case. It could be that they are medically so sick that they should not be incarcerated. They need to be home with their families. And so those are just a few of the reasons why we're doing this for the women. And I know firsthand what it was like to experience some of the things that they are experiencing.
This is a project of the National Council for Incarcerated and Formerly Incarcerated Women and Girls. We're going to give you a website that you can go to find out a little bit more about them in a moment or two. But let me ask you, how did you get involved with this particular group?
Well, I was asked to speak at a conference they held in Tulsa, Oklahoma last year about my 36 years of incarceration. So I, you know, explained to them how most attorneys, I really hadn't ran into any attorneys that knew how to do clemencies. They were not taught this in law school. It was barely mentioned, they said. So I started in 1983 doing clemencies and put several together for several women that were successful in their clemency. And so I finally was successful myself after 36 years. So after I spoke to the National Council, they decided that they wanted to take this to the state level and saw a great, great need for it. So we just recently began this and started speaking about it in January. And so the postcard campaign that we are presently doing is our phase two. our phase one was sending forms into women that are incarcerated that were recognized as having some of the disparities and medical conditions and long sentences that we identified as should be, you know, looked at and looked into and taken to the governor. And, of course, this will be a continual ongoing thing until our criminal justice system gets to where it needs to be. And as everybody knows, criminal justice reform is to the forefront right now, trying to get things changed that do not work. So we are happy to be on board with this. So the second phase of our campaign is the postcards. We are asking everybody to send them in one a week to Governor Parson at the Capitol, urging him to use his powers to release these women. And you can write on there in your own words whatever you want to say. We're encouraging males, females, even children have started making postcards. They have put flowers on them, birds on them, trees, colored them, and they have themselves gotten involved. So I challenge everybody to contact at least 10 people and send this information to them. And please continue this forward until we get all the way across the nation with this campaign, not just Missouri, but every state.
You can send your postcards to Governor Michael L. Parson, P.O. Box 720, Jefferson City, Missouri, 65102. If you can't do the postcard, you can call his office at 573-751-3222. And we'll have his address and phone number up on the website along with this episode. You're also asking folks to let the National Council know that you're participating.
Yeah.
And by you can do that by filling out the form on their website. But I can take you directly to that form by going to, and this is all lowercase letters, bit.ly/, and then it's capital F free, capital H her, capital F form. So it's bit.ly/free her form. And you can let them know that you are participating.
Oh, great. Okay, that would be awesome. Because the postcard phase, like I said, is from May 1st to July 31st. But we're also going to be working on a Missouri clemency quilt. And that will entail a square for every woman that we are working on their case. It will have their name, and we will have Missouri on the quilt. And that will be displayed in various locations across the state. And we plan also to take that to the National Association of Governors Conference in Utah in July. And every state is going to be making their own quilt. So we want to really draw attention to these women. We want the nation to know that these women are some of the women that should not be incarcerated. And we want the communities to know that we need your help in order to make this campaign a success and start making a change in our system.
I believe that in your description earlier, this is not just about women who are wrongfully convicted or something like this. This is about women who are older, women who have health problems, women who are basically taking the rap for somebody else quite often. And then again, women who have committed a crime but have paid for their crime.
Exactly. It's like I said, various reasons, and we want to bring this flight to an end with, you know, warehousing people. The warehousing has to stop. The states cannot afford that. And so this is a financial burden on the states that this is another way to alleviate that.
I want to also give people the website for the council itself so that they can go there and see what else is going on. This is the National Council for Incarcerated and Formerly Incarcerated Women and Girls. That website is nationalcouncil.us. That's actually the website for the National Council for Incarcerated and Formerly Incarcerated Women and Girls. We do want to let folks know that we are going to be talking to you again about your own particular case in a few weeks, I hope.
Yes.
So, because people need to understand that first off, the fastest growing segment of our prison population is women. Missouri is one of the fastest growing, maybe the fastest growing population. So we need to really start looking at this issue. And we want to thank our guest today, Judy Henderson, for coming on with us. Judy, any last words that you would like to give to let folks know why this is important?
Yes. I would just like for all of you to know that these women that are sitting in these prisons, they are mothers, their grandmothers, their aunts, their sisters, and their wives. And these children need their mothers. And there's so many mitigating circumstances that led them to prison that could not be presented at trial. So this is our opportunity to bring those mitigating circumstances to the forefront and have these issues looked at in a more serious manner instead of being just rushed through the trial system, rushed through the judicial system, and incarceration. So I want to thank you, Jeff, for having me on, and I very much look forward to coming back.
Well, we thank you very much, and we will be talking to you down the road.
Yes, you will.
It's the 420 Drug War News. Thanks to Doug McVeigh, the Century of Lies show from the Drug Truth Network, we have this interview with Dr. Melanie Dreher, who spent a long time studying the effects of cannabis while working in Jamaica.
They made sure that children had a cannabis tea before they went to school, and especially if they were taking a test. They wanted their children to be able to concentrate. And they did that by preparing them tea. So I did a tiny study that was then published in an education journal on whether the children who had cannabis tea performed better academically than children who didn't have the tea. And the result that, and wasn't sure we'd get this results, but in fact, the children who performed better in school were the tea drinkers. And I think one of the good things about doing this ethnographic work is that you come out of the laboratory and study natural behavior in its natural context and understand why cannabis was working in this instance. And certainly the mothers and fathers who cared enough to make sure that their children would partake of their, you know, limited little store of cannabis were also the mothers and fathers who made sure their children had clean uniforms to wear and pencils and notebooks to go to school with, and that they were actually attended school more often. So it was, cannabis tea was part of a complex of good parenting. Interestingly, we asked the teachers ahead of time which children, they did not know whether the children were getting tea or not. We asked them which children they thought would be getting the tea. And of course, the teachers were representing middle class. They disapproved of giving cannabis tea to children and got it completely wrong. The children that they thought were the high performers were indeed the high performers, but they were not the children that they thought were drinking tea. So it was an interesting little study that then led on to working with mothers, and a few women had actually begun smoking, which was out of sort of the cultural order of Jamaica.
You can hear the full interview on the April 24 edition of Century of Lies. I am Dean at drugtruth.net.
Sitting here in my problem. What am I gonna do now? Am I gonna make it? Some way, somehow. Well, maybe I'm not supposed to know.
We hope you enjoyed today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests of Jaws of Justice Radio, not of KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, its staff, or volunteers. You can find our calendar of events and a link to our show on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page. You can always listen to us live and find our podcasts on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. If you have a show idea or want to help produce the show, email us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. This is Jamie reminding you our outro music is Better Man from the Playing for Change CD. Please tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup with Law and Disorder on Tuesday, Alternative Radio on Wednesday, Cowtown Conversations on Thursday, and Between the Lines at 9 a.m., followed by Bioneers at 9:30 a.m. on Fridays. Up next is Monday Morning Medicine Show with Dr. Mike, and at noon, Arts Magazine with Michael Hoag. Stick around for Jazz and Blues in the afternoon and Eco Radio KC at 6 p.m. Then round out your day south of the border with Fiesta Musical, Compartiendo Familia, and Compartiendo en Noche.